We hope you found value in part one of this podcast. Thank you for joining us for this second segment.
Hello, and welcome to the Communication Solution Podcast with Casey Jackson and John Gilbert. I'm your host, Danielle Canton. Here at the Institute for Individual and Organizational Change, otherwise known as IFIOC, we love to talk about communication, we love to talk about solutions, and we love to talk about providing measurable results for individuals, organizations, and the communities they serve. Welcome to the communication solution that will change your world.
That was just really fascinating because I'm thinking about a situation that I had with a friend of mine, and this was a while ago, where I tend to stay away from political conversations. But to your point, when it's visible, like how different am I, quiet, observing somebody who's very outwardly conveying points of view. And we got into a conversation and it was really fascinating because I really had the intention to seek to understand, like, how can you actually think this way? It is so the opposite of what I think and how I feel. And so I looked for something that helped me make sense of it. And then I had a value that I assumed she had a value that, oh, I see the connection. You feel this way because this happened in your life. And don't you see that? A, don't put that on her, which I didn't. I was doing it in my head. But then also B, that might not be her value system. So it was a really interesting experience. And I think what is helpful and I'm taking away when you say unpacking this, there's a lot you guys are unpacking here. A takeaway that I'm getting is in any conversation, if there's strong points of view, stop. Give yourself that second to just
Thank you
say,
for listening to the Communication Solution Podcast with Casey Jackson and John Gilbert.
It sounds ridiculous.
As always, this podcast is about empowering you on your journey to change the world. So if you have questions, suggestions,
right?
Or ideas, send them our way at casey@ifioc.com. That's C-A-S-E-Y at ifioc.com.
And like kind of calling that out.
For more information or to schedule a training, visit ifioc.com. Until our next Communication Solution podcast, keep changing the world.
It's so interesting, Danielle, what's hit me about that, and I don't think either one of you know this, but I was asked to be on this Civility Summit board. And so they're doing a conference in May of 2024 here. And the intention is to bring people are actually filling out surveys before they attend the summit. And they're choosing to attend a summit on how to become more civil. And so people are filling out surveys, which means you're going to have people that are I 100% support a woman's right to choose. And people that are, I 100% am opposed to abortion. I'm 100% of supportive of this political candidate. I'm 100% against that political candidate. So people are filling out these surveys. And there is a mindfulness about putting those people together at tables. And so we're thinking about how, they've done this summit for a couple, 2 to 3 years, and they've asked me to come and participate and take a lead in it. And one of the things that we're going to do, and this is based off exactly what you're talking about, Danielle, because I thought this would be a fascinating exercise. So if people are knowingly showing up with an intention to try to be more civil, but not surrender their belief system, one of the activities I propose that we're going to work through, literally this Friday, we're having a board meeting on this, is at the table, having them together side by side, fill out the decisional balance scale. Because one of them is going to have a lot of really strong opinions on one side of the decisional balance scale, but to listen to that person's reasoning for why they're filling out this one side of it, and as they listen to each other filling out different aspects of the decisional balance scale, what insights could be had from that? And I think that's really fascinating. So to have somebody that I may wildly disagree with start to fill out the decisional balance scale about why they believe that they need to sustain this behavior, why do they believe this needs to be changed, and all their values around the damage they think and the consequences and the values of this. Are there things that I can willingly contribute to on their side of that scale. Like, oh, I can see this. I can see this. Now that you've said it that way, I understand this part of it. And not to get into a counterbalance, but just as a team to try to fill out as completely and wholly as possible both sides of a decisional balance scale. All the reasons you would stay with this behavior and all the reasons you would change this behavior. So that's what I proposed as an activity at the tables. And I think it's so much of what you're talking about how do we restrain our immediate reaction? And like John had said, with this curiosity to understand, not with a curiosity with the intention to change my own mind, but a curiosity to have a more dimensional perspective so I can be better informed and the way that I walk through the world has a higher likelihood of aligning with my own behaviors more comprehensively. So I just think that's so fascinating as we're talking about this, because I've forgotten about this, you know, this reality that I'm going to be moving up on. So, but I think that's really interesting. We're looking at this from a difference from righteousness and civility, even as you're talking about the way you're interacting with people, Danielle.
And so we're at this point of talking about like understanding, curiosity, and what you were just alluding to is acceptance. I don't have to agree, but I can accept. And there's a certain organicness that you are bringing up, Casey, of like, well, then I could learn and make more of an informed choice. And you even use the word mindfulness, which is kind of hot right now with this lady from Harvard named Ellen Langer that just released a whole book on this. She's quite an interesting individual, but she talks a lot about mindfulness opening up possibility for how we look at nuance and how we choose then to choose that story or choose that place, being full of our mind rather than mindless, which is to react. It's kind of like the classic quippy saying of to respond versus being reactive, but being responsive, right? And I'm highlighting that these are all interesting ways to start thinking, but it seems like it could, from certain perspectives, be like, well, that's just feel good, you know, whatever, or I don't want to do that. I don't think that person's right or deserves the right to either tread on me or that they're this type of a person that has done these things. I was even, to not make it like even political, I was in Seattle recently and there was a filming going on. They're like, well, unless you just flew in from Idaho, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, wait a minute. So we can be open-minded unless you want to denigrate people that are not, your, from your perspective, open-minded. So it's this weird, it doesn't matter the political spectrum. It's just like, I guess I'm trying to get oriented to someone that feels in the right, that can put down, you know, people like that from whatever. What's the motivation to do any of this? Why would this really serve me and my views when I believe I'm right?
Well, this is it. And it, the louder I speak, I want to keep going back to some of the, you know, what happens in our body when we do these things is the rush of adrenaline that makes us feel like what we're doing is helping us survive is an extremely potent neurochemical situation that happens inside of our biological dynamic that happens inside of our body. So, you know, after someone, if you, you know, after somebody shot someone, after, you know, somebody screams at someone, after they, the, if, when you measure all the chemicals and all the energy flowing in the body, there, that's, there are replications of certain drugs that we use, that some people use recreational, that some people use for surgeries. Like there's a replication of chemistry happening in the body that is extremely potent. And some of those potencies can become very addictive. So to be somebody that screams all the time and feels righteous in the way you pound your fist on the table can become addictive because of the rush of things that are happening inside your body, which at times has nothing to do with the topic on the table. There's people that you find argue just for the sake of arguing, and then afterwards say they weren't even mad. And everybody around them's like, I don't even want to talk to this person again because they were so offended by what they said. They're like, well, I don't know why people took it personally. I wasn't even mad. But the rush of chemicals that they get and the neural response that they have is so potent that they can't stop doing it. And then because of what we tend to do, we want to make it about other people. you're a snowflake, you're just too sensitive, you're just too, when by so many standards, it's just socially inappropriate. It's just not socially appropriate to do it the way that some people choose to interact. So it's really fascinating when we look at how we can put narrative or psychology around interactions. And for me, an attempt to continue to keep our arms from it, around it from an MI perspective, is it comes down to, you know, being really clear as dimensionally as possible of what are my values and are my behaviors in line with it. John and I, we've disclosed this before, when John and I had a rough past professionally and personally, when we had one of our deepest conversations around it, we came to almost an instantaneous like resolution that was like, we were both so focused on one of our core values. We weren't taking in two or three or four other values that we believe in into it, because as soon as we took those into the equation, the whole thing was reconciled. It's like, oh, yes, if I'm going to argue from this perspective that connection is the most important thing, or I'm going to argue from this perspective that integrity is the most important thing, that can become a dual. But when you say, is connection and integrity important? Then we both would nod our heads. Is a sense of security and safety important? We'd both nod our heads. And it's like, okay, then you have to kind of surrender your righteousness and go, okay, if I just pick one, I can get really righteous about defending it and attacking somebody that doesn't support this as a number one. But if you put it in a collective, it really is hard to not start taking the other person's perspective into account and going, you know what? Everything you've talked about is extremely valid.
Well, and this is where it gets into, and we might not have the time to get into it, but I might have a shared value, like Danielle, you were bringing up, of this person you were talking with or someone you're talking with. Say it's in the Western culture, especially in America, we tend to have more individualistic than collectivistic values, freedom. We broke away from the UK, all that history of kind of doing that whole thing on our own, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So we might have one person say, I believe in freedom, and that person have a different vision of what their version of freedom means to them versus someone else. And I think what at a certain point that's hard with this perspective is what you're bringing up, but is important, is how to understand freedom from their perspective. There seems to be a point to that. And that's what I'm still asking, that I'm curious about, is, you know, we could look to Dr. William Miller's book on loving kindness and aligning with those values, if we align with that kind of treating people humanely. But I'm wondering, like, what is the motivation for people to take this approach if it's so much work and it's so counter? Like, I'm just trying to get oriented. Is it that it's the right thing to do? And then we could infer, you know, or what do you feel is the motivation for people to go to the work of not retracting, but blocking this lovely neurochemical response that they could have to just let go on people, right? Because that's what we do most of the time. I'm guilty of it. We all have done it. What is driving this conversation for MI, or the eight things you've been alluding to? What's the point behind all that? What are we seeing as the benefits?
I think what's interesting is it's how much it is. I can't untangle all of the numbers of depends on what people's individual value sets are and how their narrative wants them to operationalize their own values. Because I'm going to go back to, you know, a friend of mine. And he, when you talk about that, John, the first thing I think of is I start leaning in and just going, exactly, exactly, exactly. And then my brain starts looking through that lens. And it's like, yeah, personal growth is just this airy-fairy BS. Like, you know, exactly. It's just ridiculous. Just talk in emotional circles as much as you want to. That's not going to get the job done. So I just know this person's mindset relatively well. And I think that's what makes it so complicated, is their behavior aligned with their values. What's so fascinating to me, and I think it's such a good example, is because I know that their political beliefs are different than mine. They lean a little bit more towards exploring things that are called conspiracies. They're more open to exploring those things and getting more data around things that some people perceive as conspiracies. And it's somebody that's extremely smart, very high IQ, very smart individual. And so again, it kind of breaks some stereotypes. But I think looking at that, I also know some of their internal narratives about the need to be right. And it goes back to that whole righteousness. And I want my reality to be clear, even when there's things that happen that I see that are completely hypocritical, that are literally saying one thing and then behaving completely the opposite, or saying one thing today and then saying almost the exact opposite a different day. It is interesting the lengths that our brains will go to make sure that we come across as right, even if we don't track our own narratives over time. Which is why, like what Danielle's talking about, if you're a growth mindset person or you believe in growth is when you're, you know, operate from that place, you will set down some of that righteousness if it helps you grow to the next level. You can let go of some of those things if it's going to help you move to be closer to who you believe yourself to be. Is that one of your values, is to grow and have those kind of interactions? Or is that just fundamentally irrelevant? And I think that's the thing that startles me, is for some people that growth is fundamentally irrelevant. That's not why I'm here. So I think this really gives you those diversities of, you know, different perspectives, or the polarities of perspective that can keep people in conflict. It's the need to be right, I think, is where things start to get heated.
And the need to reach and have impact, whether someone phrases it like that, why would I speak up to begin with? Well, maybe to be heard and seen for why I'd speak up. Why else might I speak up? What's my motivation behind that? It might be just a reaction that I've unconsciously learned. I'm being mindless. I'm not actually being mindful of why I'm speaking up. Maybe another why could be that I want to persuade you. I want to get you to see how right I am, or that I'm in the right, and prove not just to myself, but to you. And the reason I highlight that, Casey, because it seems like there's a potential discrepancy here for anyone of any side if they're speaking up in a way that metaphorically is shooting themselves in the foot to potentially, no guarantees, especially with all our belief systems we're bringing to the table, but potentially to decrease the resistance in the other person in a way that you're being the change you would like to be treated, which is being understood before you've been judged. And I would like to believe, but I have all my biases and stuff in this, that that is some motivation here, would be to be how you would like to be treated with others and see if they respond. And as you know, Casey, from personal conversations we have, they don't always model that. But you can invite it in. You can try to be it. And it might be my own bias of integrity. It might be all these other biases. But I would highlight that if someone really is trying to make an impact in someone else's perspective, that at least treating them from first acceptance, trying to understand, genuinely trying to do those things, and try to find positive intent and all these things, is not just feel good. It can be helpful for a shared outcome if you want to live in a society or a world where someone else has a different view than you. And if you don't, you can totally try to start your own country, like might happen in ours, but we'll see. But it sounds like that has some motivation behind it. Even if you don't have exactly the growth mindset, you can have a different kind of mindset of, how would I want to be treated? That's in a lot of religions. How would effective would I be? That's a bit more of the verbal judo perspective, unfortunately, that loses the spirit. But there's lots of other motives, it seems like, behind doing this, other than just the feel good and other than people that are already in a growth mindset, I would like to believe.
You know, and I don't want to make direct correlations. I want to bring this back into, like, pull this completely back onto an MI lane. Because the one thing that makes me feel comfortable in having this conversation is anybody that's listening to this podcast has to have some sense of a growth mindset, or they wouldn't be listening to our podcast. So that makes it easier for me to kind of dial into, okay, then what do we have control over? And what we have control over is having an awareness or making attempts to understand the depth and the complexity of my own individual value set. And if I'm more of a collective community, you know, what is genuinely do I believe in from a collective values perspective, and understanding that deeply and dimensionally. And then being able to pause and go, is my behavior in alignment with it? And when I can pull it back to something extremely concrete, like when I do the relationship courses or the parenting courses, it's not a matter of looking at everybody else. It's a matter of, for me, of looking at every decision I make every single day. And is every decision I make every single day above reproach based on my own value set? And I am imperfect and it's not. So then stop blaming other people that they're not, because you are not. That just helps my reset button keep going to, you know, remove the log from your own eye first before you're pointing out the splinter in someone else's. And I think those are the things for me that are so critical to live a life that I believe has integrity, that comes from a place of deeply wanting to have connection with other people, because these are some of my core values, wanting to have that sense of contribution. And since these are my core values, it's this chronic assessment of, I can rationalize all sorts of behaviors, but is my behavior in line with my values? When I have friends that have completely different political beliefs than I do, I really have to lean heavily into connection is important to me, because the first thing I want to do is just not connect with them, which is ironic for somebody that says connection is so important to them. Well, I've got other people I can talk to. I've got other friends. And it's like, well, that's interesting that you're going to pick and choose when you want to be aligned with that value. Because I'm going to be aligned with that value all the time, then I want to be connected with as many people as I can in the most empathetic way for my own growth and my own sense of contribution. And I know that empathy and acceptance are going to get to a better outcome for every person that I interface with. And I think this is what you know, I know that you're scratching your head, John. You and I talk about righteous indignation. And it's like, if I'm trying to live a values-based life, do I believe people have the right to have righteous indignation? Absolutely, everybody has the right for that. And is there a place for that? And can I justify that 100%? But is that going to be completely aligned with all of my values as I define myself? That's going to cause me at least to stop, like Danielle was saying. It's like, I've got thoughts, but I need to stop and listen a little bit more, because it's too easy for me to react in this moment. So as I'm, you know, trying to wrangle all of this back in and put it into that motivational mindset, these are the things that really do make it easier for me to kind of bring it back to an N of one or an N of my community and just go, is my behavior getting me what I want? Is my behavior really aligning with the dimensionality of my values?
You know, to kind of bring it back to where we started with politics, I pulled up the definition of politics, and it's the activities associated with the governance of a country or other area, especially the debate or conflict among individuals or parties having or hoping to achieve power. So the absolute nature of the conversation we chose to have today was embedded in this idea of debating and conflict and picking and choosing, which leads me to this path of, you know, in the US anyway, it's a big voting year. And listening to everything you guys are saying, we can go and charge in the US into the booth or the ballot we mail in, whatever it might be. And there's this instinctual response that I have to actually rile myself up to choose, to actually pick and feel the righteous indignation of whatever that choice is. Like, you've got to back it. And and I feel like this conversation with you guys has opened up other possibilities to maybe look at something we've taken for granted that's happening and naturally is embedded in the entire idea of our system and say, can we do it differently? Can we actually step out of that ambivalence? And it's not about this that you guys always talk about, but it's about this. Okay, what do I want to choose? And what if it's a choose? What if it's a choice instead of a debate or a conflict? And it could be that, how am I trying to say it? Not a threat, a threat to your safety or to your, I must justify this or really get riled up about either side. And it's as simple as, I'm going to really think this through and what's the best action for me to take here that's aligned with my values and just choose it and move on.
Well, and that relates to MI highly in the sense that you have the motivation to look at it differently. Maybe you are in a setting that helps make that a habit. Maybe those around you do it, so you're more likely that way. but the very fact that you're saying, huh, rather than, right? People spend their whole lives, religions, meditations, whatever, to go to that, huh? And the fact that you're taking the time and effort to try to be more mindful about the options on the table is change from the lovely satisfaction of saying, ugh. And that's why I was so curious about it, is us trying to understand other people's motives is so specific to motivational interviewing, hence the name that Miller chose, that us just using tenets of that basic understanding might be a place to start if we feel that we have some sense of it helping us get what we want, either the tenets of a growth mindset, Casey, like you articulated eloquently, or just the fact that it would make it things less stressful for both of us, or some other motive like we talked about. But it seems like we need motive inside of us or some modeling around us. MI seems to be a way, to a degree, to at least start to frame how to enter that conversation with skill. We just got to make sure we're oriented with motivation, or we just might need to see some pain in our life or something else that might have to happen too that I want to acknowledge as well. But I would say that's my last two cents on it for how it relates to MI. So I don't know, Casey or Danielle, if you wanted to end with anything else.
Yeah, well, my last two cents is, in spite of global politics, in spite of US politics, I am extremely appreciative that I'm with you two who are both invested in a growth mindset. Because it's like that's my bastion of safety, is being able to talk with, you know, with people that I have a resonance with that operate the way that I do. And it's not against other people, but it's just, I just have a deep appreciation in the middle of all the chaos that can happen on the planet, to be able to find like-minded people to share thoughts with is, I think what everybody is looking for, whatever the like-minded is for people. So I'm glad we walked down this path. My brain is now abuzz.
Thank you. Everybody listening, thank you so much for joining us, participating. We'd love your feedback. What do you think? How are you navigating these times around politics? Any kind of unrest? What other topics do you have? And we'd love to have you actually join us on the podcast. So reach out at Casey@ifioc.com and let us know what you think. We appreciate you. Have a wonderful day.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Communication Solution Podcast with Casey Jackson and John Gilbert. As always, this podcast is about empowering you on your journey to change the world. So if you have questions, suggestions, or ideas, send them our way at Casey@ifioc.com. That's Casey@ifioc.com. For more information or to schedule a training, visit ifioc.com. Until our next Communication Solution podcast, keep changing the world.